This is a summary of Putin's Playbook by bestbookbriefings.com. Putin's Playbook. Russia's Secret Plan to Defeat America. By Rebecca Koffler. Russia's War on America. Get it straight. America is at war today. The Kremlin's meddling in the election of 2016 is only the first page in a master plan to unbalance America, or defeat it through military means if necessary. Russia wants an America that is weakened by political dysfunction, divided by social tension, struggling economically, and estranged from its allies. A distracted America will be far more unlikely to get in the way of Putin's ambitions. To accomplish this goal, Russia will use its tools of influencing campaigns, economic pressure, cyber operations, and a measurement of military force. Since at least March 2016, the Russian government has been spearheading cyber-based intrusions into some of America's most critical infrastructure, like energy and water, and the commercial and manufacturing sectors. It is unclear whether they still have a presence in our critical systems, but the likelihood is high. During the Christmas of 2015, Russia temporarily shut down Ukraine's power grid in the very first recorded cyber attack of that kind outside of a military conflict. U.S. intelligence considers Russia to be the leading power in the cyber sphere. They are constantly probing the U.S.'s system for vulnerabilities and stealing technical plans for almost every major military. With that said, there has been very little public discussion about our vulnerabilities, likely because the Russians never actually pulled the trigger to cause a catastrophe. But this in itself is a strategy that they sometimes employ, actions that have limited consequences, in order to signal Russia's capability for destruction. Russia's cyber intrusions are a test run for a potential war in the future. Meanwhile, Russia took steps towards establishing its military power. In March 2018, Putin announced in his annual State of the Nation address that Russia had brand new next-generation nuclear weapons aimed at the United States, which he claimed were immune to being intercepted. This was only the latest version of Putin's anti-American approach. Moscow sees a war with the United States as an inevitability in the long run, and as such, regularly practices for it. Their weapon systems are capable of hitting targets all over the United States without ever having to enter its sovereign airspace. Russia depends on its nuclear abilities as the ultimate contingency to the US's conventional superiority. According to NORAD, Russian bombers make long-range stories just outside of the US's air defense zone 6 to 7 times a year. They will sometimes conduct these missions on major US holidays as a show of symbolism. Up until the Trump administration, Washington's preferred weapon against Moscow's cyber and nuclear threats has been economic sanctions. But despite the media's portrayal of Trump being soft on Russia, the US's stance has toughened towards Russia, expelling Russian diplomats, approving lethal weapons being sent to Ukraine, and adopting defensive policies. Pre-Trump, the United States was concerned that offensive operations launched against Russia would get in the way of gathering intelligence, or worse, be met with reckless retaliation. Only time will tell which approach will be more effective at dealing with the Russian threat. What does Russia have against America? Moscow bafflingly sees itself as actually being on the defensive. Russia still considers the area that was once known as the Soviet Union as part of their exclusive sphere of influence, critical to their security, and therefore off-limits to the West. The fact that Washington freely allows these Baltic states to join NATO is considered a direct and existential threat to Russia, making them more insecure and unpredictable. Putin was deeply concerned by the US's involvement in conflicts in the Middle East, and feared that they might eventually make a move towards Russia. Of note is the dissolution of Yugoslavia, and the brutal deaths of his fellow strongmen Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi. Russian officials also blamed Washington for the revolutions that took place in Ukraine, Georgia, and Kyrgyzstan, accusing them of meddling. Russia's tendency to perceive threats is also influenced by the Eurasianism ideology, which sees Russia and the United States in an existential conflict over the control of Eurasia, the landmass that includes Europe and Asia. The concept of the Eurasian heartland puts forward the idea that due to the large area's central location and large amounts of natural resources, whoever controls it commands the world. Cold War thinking has influenced Moscow into holding Washington responsible for the dissolution of the Soviet Union and into thinking that America aims to one day overthrow Putin's regime. To them, Washington's promotion of democracy and human rights, paired with the expansion of NATO, is just a way of installing anti-Russian, pro-Western governments in Eurasia. As such, Russia rejects the values that America holds dear, seeing them only as opportunism. Russian history is defined by the oppression it inflicts in the name of stability and preservation of power for the ruling class. Moscow's suspicions have also been formed by its troubled past. Russians have a strong connection to their history, which is scarred over by invasions, wars, and revolutions that devastated the economy and claimed the lives of millions. Within the past century, Russia has experienced four catastrophes in the form of World War I, the Bolshevik Revolution, World War II, commonly known as the Great Patriotic War, and the dissolution of the USSR. These events have made Russians deeply paranoid and presumptive of inevitable conflict. Russians believe that war is a matter of when, not if. As such, they always prepare for the worst, adopting a fear equals respect mentality. This perspective may be harder to understand for Americans, who assume, or at least hope for a peaceful future. But with the glaring exception of the 9/11 attacks, America has not experienced a major conflict on its territory for more than a century and a half. Most Americans believe that wars happen somewhere else. Russians believe that only a strong leader can protect them. This is why, despite his authoritarian leanings, Putin still earns high approval ratings. Joseph Stalin was responsible for the deaths of millions of Soviet citizens, but he is still loved and supported by many. Most Russians are willing to sacrifice what they feel they need to in the name of stability and security. Under Putin's leadership, Russia's top national interest is the rebuilding of the Derzhava, or Empire State. To make this possible, they need little powers to surround as a sort of security fence, providing them with a barrier for any potential invasions, as has happened in the past. The success of Moscow's scheme in the 2016 elections was not in infiltrating Trump's presidential campaign, but with shifting America's focus away from the very real threat that Russia represented, and towards fighting each other. What better prize than 3 years of national turmoil and the outright impeachment of a U.S. president? As Americans have taken their eyes off the true target, we have stumbled into a gray zone of warfare with Russia. The risk of escalating our current state of tension into a direct military conflict is high, with the threat of a nuclear strike being the most obvious and dangerous scenario. The threat exists, whether we choose to recognize it or not. Who is Vladimir Putin? To many people, Russia is bewildering, upsetting, confusing. Why did Russia do this? What does Russia want? Who is President Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin? What are his motivations, his intentions? Why is he so angry with America and the West? Putin is seen as a villain, a revisionist, a disruptor. His very state of mind has been questioned by political leaders and security analysts. Some policy officials seem to think that if one day Putin were to somehow disappear or be replaced, all of the problems that Russia poses would go away as well. But is it really that easy? Is Putin an irrational threat? Simply put, there is nothing insane about Putin or his behavior. There is a method to his madness, but his logic is explicitly Russian, and more than a little Soviet, his actions are a reflection of Russia's cultural norms and standards. With this in mind, we can start to make sense of the man. Putin was mainly shaped by his personal and family experience of surviving World War II, particularly with the siege of Leningrad by the Germans, the fall of the Soviet Union, his personal training in judo, and of course, his career as a colonel in the KGB. Putin's father was an officer of the Soviet secret police, who conducted sabotage operations behind German lines, but he was discharged before the war ended because of his injuries. Putin's mother barely survived the siege of Leningrad, pulled out of a pile of corpses and narrowly escaping starvation. Putin's one-year-old brother was not as fortunate. Putin grew in poverty, living in government-owned housing. According to his own account and others, he was a bad student, a brawler, and a hooligan. In order to maintain his social status, however, he turned his life around. He credits his history with sports and judo specifically for keeping him off the streets, and providing him with discipline, mental and physical agility, confidence, and a specialized perspective when it came to dealing with his opponents. This would come in handy in his future roles as an intelligence operative and as a political player. Putin once said that judo teaches you to take control, to feel the edge of the moment, to see the strengths and weaknesses of your opponent, and strive for the best outcome. Putin's ability to sense the right time, and to exploit his opponent's hesitation comes from that training. As a young child, Putin was fascinated by the job of an intelligence officer, a spy. What amazed me most of all was how one man's effort could achieve what whole armies could not, he said. Putin's first assignment in the KGB was in the 4th Department of the 1st Chief Directorate, who specialized in foreign intelligence. His work entailed collecting and stealing secrets from foreign adversaries, from military to political to scientific and technical. Where U.S. intelligence prefers technical sources like high-resolution satellite photography, cyber hacking and phone tapping, Russian intelligence prefers human and agent resources, otherwise known as spies. This is the riskiest form of intelligence work, as agents who get caught are at risk of death or worse, for them and for their families back home. In 1977, Putin pivoted to counterintelligence at the Department of Investigations. One of the roles of counterintelligence is disrupting the foreign intelligence operations that aim to recruit Russian citizens as spies, usually government employees, people in the military, or defense contractors. It takes years of work, incredible amounts of resources and sophisticated maneuvering in order to catch a good spy. Counterintelligence in Russia enjoys a special status. The skills of this trade have been perfected into a vicious art. Most ordinary Russians fear and revile this branch of the KGB, because their primary mission is to spy on citizens. The Russian state is relentless when it comes to pursuing, uncovering, and eliminating dissent. During the time of the USSR, citizens were afraid of talking to foreigners at all, for fear of being interrogated, jailed, or killed. When people disappear and are never heard from again, it is counterintelligence agents who take them away. This is the cloth from which Putin is cut. From 1985 to 1990, Putin was posted in Dresden, East Germany, in order to collect political intelligence undercover, primarily targeting political figures. Part of the job required him to estimate his target's reaction during disarmament talks. Another part of the job required recruiting foreign human sources, a task that requires an expert grasp of human psychology, assessing strengths, weaknesses, and motivators. These skills could be particularly useful to him as a president who was skilled in manipulating the leaders of other nations. Putin specializes in communicating with people. As he explained, this requires the ability to interact with a wide range of individuals, establish a dialogue and bring out the best in his partners. You must respect your partner and acknowledge that he is better than you in one way or another. You must make him your ally, make him feel that there is something that unites you, that you have a common cause. Given how confident he is in his ability, Putin doesn't allow other people to communicate his messages. No matter who his audience is, he chooses to exercise contact with them. He delivers 4 or more major, intensively studied speeches every year. He doesn't back away from granting interviews with Western journalists, even if he knows they won't go as easy on him as the state-controlled Russian media. He uses these interviews as a way to promote Russia's positions and look down on Western foreign policies. He redirects questions and manipulates his opponents in order to bring the flow of the discussion under his control. When Fox News interviewed him, he turned it into an opportunity to sow discord among the American people. After all, he now had a direct line to them via the most viewed network on cable TV. It is important to understand who Putin is, and who he isn't. Although he is a statist, Putin is not a communist. At least, not anymore. Although his time with the KGB required him to be a member of the Communist Party, he eventually became disillusioned with this political alignment. Putin blames the communist doctrine for Russia's economic, technological, and social setbacks, and the Communist Party of the Soviet Union for letting the USSR crumble. Putin is not an anti-Semite. After decades of hostility between the USSR and Israel, Putin has made drastic steps to improve their relationships, becoming the first Kremlin leader to visit Israel in 2005. In 2012, he opened a Jewish museum and tolerance center in Moscow to the tune of $60 million, recognizing the ways that Jewish people have contributed to the Soviet way of life. It's likely that he developed a friendly attitude towards the Jewish people because of fond childhood memories of a kind Jewish couple, but the pragmatic side of it is that there are 1.2 million Russian expatriates who live in Israel, a significant pool of citizens who could someday return to their motherland, much to Russia's benefit. Putin might be a villain, but he is not a supervillain. He is ruthless towards his enemies, and he has an iron grasp on his power and fortune. But his character is more complex than the West often portrays it to be. Russian citizens have been able to travel with relative freedom, and many notable Russians like Alex Ovechkin and Khabib Nurmagomedov are able to train and work abroad. As hard-nosed as he can be, he is still relatively moderate for a country that has produced Ivan the Terrible and Joseph Stalin. Putin is not an anomaly. He did not come up with the idea that Russians must put the needs of the collective state before the individual, or the notion that a strong state was required to survive, or to distrust the West. All of these concepts predate Putin by centuries and define Russian mainstream thinking. Electoral adjustments aside, there is a reason why Putin has been elected to his position 4 times in a row. It is easy to be disgusted by Putin, the judo man who fights dirty and breaks all the rules, easy to label him as a thug and an opportunist. But he is a skillful strategist and tactician, and always on the lookout for the advantage. To develop serious policies and plans against him, we must consider the facts at hand. How Russia prepares for war. Putin likes to emphasize the importance of outsmarting America, instead of outgunning them. After all, the balance of power, at least when it comes to conventional arms, still favors the United States. Outsmarting your opponent requires you to thoroughly prepare and understand how they think and fight. As a result of their history, the Russians have learned the importance of a practical strategy that is tailored to a specific enemy. The Russian war planning system is a result of a complex interagency process that is directed by Putin himself. It requires meticulous work by different agencies and services in the Russian government working together, like the Security Council, military and intelligence services, and specially made think tanks. As Supreme Commander, Putin has total authority over all these decisions. This concept of unilateral decision-making is called yedinonakolai, sole control, or unionless, and with Putin's training, this style comes naturally. Putin makes sure that all of the decisions he makes are legal. In the case that a law doesn't align with his way of thinking, he changes the law. Russians have learned to see absolute power as a safeguard against chaos, that a certain level of dictatorship is a necessary evil. Even when faced with a despot like Stalin, they will often choose to obey, passively resist, or to get comfortable with suffering. There is no word for fun in the Russian language. They believe that to live means to struggle. The leaders in the Kremlin rely heavily on these character traits, and know that when it comes to war, Russians will be willing to outsuffer and outsacrifice the opponent. Simply put, Russia believes that it can sustain higher losses than the West can. Furthermore, Russians view civilian suffering and casualties as a natural part of war. Counter to the Western mentality, Russian doctrine actually sees these as a way of de-escalating conflict, the idea that their enemies will be unable to bear watching human suffering and will negotiate towards a ceasefire in Russia's favor. Understanding all of this is important if you want to develop a counter-strategy. According to the Kremlin's doctrine, there is never actually peacetime. Russia sees itself in a constant state of geopolitical struggle, and Putin is determined to take one of the best positions on the ladder. To counter this, the United States needs to understand what vulnerabilities Russia will want to focus on and exploit. In places where Russia is fighting proxy wars with the United States, like Ukraine and Syria, they are eager to show off their military power and tactics. The intent is not only to prevent America from securing their influence in these places, but to showcase what kind of arsenal America might one day have to face themselves. Remember that in the event that Moscow's security red lines are crossed, Russia is militarily prepared to wage an all-out war. Putin believes that America understands where these red lines are, but is willing to push them through NATO expansion. Putin has shown that he is willing to invade or destabilize Russia's former states, rather than let them ally with NATO and the European Union. Putin understands that he is playing a risky game that can lead to rapid escalation, but it is a risk that he is accustomed to. It was his way of life, after all. Russia's Star Wars. Should the conflict between Russia and America escalate into the military realm, space will be the main battlefield. America's satellite capabilities were the primary factor for their victories in the Middle East. More than 1,000 satellites provide critical military and civilian functions like warning against missiles, communications, reconnaissance, and weather data. As such, Russian military planners have been keeping a very close eye on the situation. The conclusion they have drawn is that although America's superiority in space is their greatest advantage, it is also their greatest vulnerability, since the US military has a fundamental, almost absolute dependence on it. Even nuclear weapons, the ultimate deterrent, depend on satellites. Remove this strategic resource, or what the Russians would call the technological crutch, and the logistical and psychological effects will be significant. Asymmetrical warfare is the name of the game. As such, Russia is pursuing the development of counter-space, anti-satellite weapons, both as a measure against America's technology and out of a well-founded concern that they are being overtaken by the Chinese. With that said, Putin's Russia is a global leader in the realm of space launch and transport. Even the United States depends on Russia's RD-180 rocket engine in order to launch their top-secret military satellites. Given their long-standing history of venturing into space, Moscow also has a very matured space and counterspace military doctrine. Cyber attacks on American mines. Russia has the most advanced and destructive arsenal of cyber weapons in the world. This highly innovative toolbox gives Putin the ability to run circles around the US government, manipulating American citizens' attitudes and ability to perceive reality. If Russia's cyber hacking capabilities were to be compared to one of the world's other leading cyber powers, China, Russia would be skilled and stealthy, and China would be large and loud. Russia's culture is rooted in secrecy and conspiracy, as well as a drive to control its citizens' behavior and thinking. This means that their approach to cyber warfare is widely different from the United States, which values freedom of speech and privacy. Where America focuses on the technical aspect, systems, networks, and data, the Russians focus on the informational psychological aspect, how human minds process information, and how an opponent's thinking can be influenced and manipulated. Russia's cyber doctrine can be boiled down into a single term, informationoe protivoborstvo, or information confrontation, literally translated as counter-struggle. Although this phrase may sound awkward in English, it accurately reflects the Russian mindset of being surrounded by enemies and having to go on defensive action. Russian leaders believe that their citizens will fight harder if they believe that they are protecting the motherland against a foreign enemy, rather than as the aggressor. Russia has three types of cyber operations that it uses to prepare for a conflict with America. 1. The first type focuses on collecting intelligence that will support the Russian government's policy, such meetings and negotiations with America's political and military leaders, plans on policy issues like arms control, economic sanctions against Russia, and ongoing conflicts. 2. The second type is strategic reconnaissance of computer access to facilities and other key targets. 3. The third focuses on cyber-enabled operations designed to influence the way Americans think about their government. A striking example of the third type was achieved in 2016, when Russian intelligence agents released stolen DNC communications that revealed they were working to improve Hillary Clinton's chances of winning the Democratic Party's presidential nomination. This, along with the controversy that arose from Russia's alleged collusion in the Trump campaign, tied America up in congressional probes and investigation, and resulted in Americans losing trust in their own democratic process. No country, no matter how developed or backwards, can ever consider itself as safe from the danger a cyber-enabled aggressor poses to its government or its society. Spies in America. Putin's most powerful tool in his playbook are his intelligence operatives and their spies. This intelligence apparatus enables all of Russia's other forms of statecraft, from space operations, cyber intrusions, sabotage and assassination, and even military campaigns. Russia uses its embassies in the United States as the base of their intelligence operations against them. Operatives work undercover as diplomats, collecting critical intelligence in the process. Of note is the fact that the Russian embassy compound in Washington and the consulates in San Francisco and New York are all strategically placed at high elevation to best intercept U.S. communications. When the San Francisco consulate was closed in the fall of 2017 on orders from the Trump administration, clouds of smoke were spotted from their chimney, a clear sign that Russian operatives were hurriedly burning classified documents before they left. Russian intelligence uses a tactic that is relatively unique to them, the insertion of illegals or deep cover intelligence officers within their enemy's society, posing as regular citizens. Unlike official diplomats, these agents don't have the protection of diplomatic immunity. If their cover is blown, they will absolutely be tried and charged for treason. Highly trained illegals spend years or even decades integrating into their society before they ever take action. They must integrate their host nation's psyche into their own, with the ultimate purpose of enabling their homeland to destabilize and defeat the enemy. Russia invests a significant amount of their resources into their illegals program, as they believe that deep cover officers can obtain insights that traditional methods otherwise would not be able to. The most recent public case of Russian illegal intel officers in the United States was in 2010, when the FBI arrested a spy ring of 10 agents who operated in several major U.S. cities. It took them 10 years to identify the suspects, gather enough evidence, and build an adequate case against them. All of this suggests that the illegals did their job incredibly well. For his part, Putin held the 10 agents in high regard, and mentioned that although Russia already knew who sold these operatives out, their punishment would not be elaborated upon. In his words, such people usually end up dead because of drunkenness or drugs, under a fence. The military option. As we have established, Russia is not a match for the United States in direct military confrontation, but they are still at the top of their game. Today's Russian military is superior to its Cold War self, and even more so than its post-USSR self. Russia has a robust array of modern precision strike missiles, air defense systems, electronic warfare abilities, among many more. All of this presents the US with a potential war that will be fundamentally different than any it has fought in the past. All of this comes from the unprecedented push by Putin to modernize Russia's military program. Even when Russia experienced economic downturns in the past, Putin has always moved to increase their defense budget. As he once said during an annual press conference, if you don't want to feed your own army, you will be feeding someone else's. Meanwhile, the US's military has been dealing with some deep cuts with its budget, and the outright weakening of some of its capabilities, like electronic warfare. Any advantage Putin spots will make it more likely to provoke him into attacking. The tensions between America and Russia today are not that different from the Cold War's. Little progress has been made in developing an understanding. Russia imagines the worst possible motives with US leaders, and Washington dismisses the Kremlin's mindset because it doesn't fit with their standard way of thinking. When it comes to war, we can never rely on the chance of cooler heads prevailing. We've been lucky in the past, but luck isn't a strategic resource, you can't plan for it. Even if you don't plan on going to war, it's important to remember war may choose you anyway. There is a tragically inadequate understanding of how seriously Putin's Russia is considering and preparing for war with the United States. This misunderstanding comes from the intelligence community's gaps in knowledge about the Russian doctrine and mindset, and an absence of the skills required to read, think, and understand in Russian, the way they read, think, and understand us. If we cannot think like the enemy, we cannot prepare for them. Putin will take advantage of our ignorance to win. Whether you prefer to read or listen, we have something for you. Visit bestbookbriefings.com now for more summaries.